That's RadioRootz.org.
Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations.
If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts, to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org.
Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, it's, of course, Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides with a special guest, a local resident, Chuck
Huddleston.
There we go. I'm glad when the guests help me. So stay tuned. We're going to be talking about what I call the parking lot panic law, the ban on public assemblies, or what they call the parking lot trespass law passed by City Council two nights ago.
I'm young, just in my teens. I make toys here in Thailand. The pig lady and the big ears mouse. You think this is fairyland, but the bosses are in your face. They push and yell all day. They need more toys somewhere far away. You can't live on what they pay. But we will have dignity, tear down this misery. The world will hear our song, we're growing strong. One Monday afternoon, there were screams in the factory, the whole building consumed by flames, doors locked for security. In that cruel cheap fire trap, 200 workers died. The broken toys and broken people strewn all over side by side. But we will have dignity, tear down this misery. The world will hear our song, we're growing strong. And we're fighting back, petitions and boycotts will carry us through. They'll all know this world is our world too. Across the seas, a land where the dolls find a family and the children get to go to school. They don't work in a factory. There are unions that struggle for better pay and safety. We'll never rest until the day all people live in dignity. We will have dignity, tear down this misery. The world will hear our song, we're growing strong.
In Honduras,
we're growing strong.
In Haiti,
we're growing strong.
In Ghana,
we're growing strong.
And that, believe it or not, was Ray Corona and Working People's Music Tape. Only $5, and you probably know why. Interesting lyrics, mostly on key, but a little bit off key. So there you have it. However, we are Free Radio. We are always on target. And if we're not, you get to correct us. So give a call if you have any questions, any corrections, any thoughts, any complaints. And you want to make your voice known on air, because that is really what we're trying to do, is provide an opportunity for there to be a dialogue, a real dialogue, and not one that is orchestrated by a city council which has pretty much already made up its mind and allows you a two-minute scream before it proceeds to rubber stamp the staff's agenda, as happened last Tuesday, in my view. You could tell me your view, and I hope you do. Again, 427-3772, 427-FRSC is the call-in number. In the studio with me is Chuck Huddleston. Hi, Chuck.
Hi.
And you're a local yokel, perhaps?
Not too local. I live up in the Santa Cruz Mountains. I rent a room from very nice people up there. This is my town, though. I like theater. I like the bookstores. For me, it's a theater district. I come down here to see movies. I have a meal. I'm off all but 3 days a week. I'm semi-retired.
How old are you?
Work part-time. 65.
Well, stay out of the parking lots, Chuck, okay? And definitely stay out of the parking garages.
I haven't done it in the past, but that's definitely going to be on my agenda now.
Actually, I met Chuck here. I met you, Chuck, when you were... You sat around and waited for an hour to speak at the parking lot trespass law discussion, the first reading of the law, which came up on Tuesday evening at the Santa Cruz City Council. And you spoke so eloquently that even Shanna Banana McCord, as I call her, and her because I frequently find her stories both implausible, sloppy, and morally objectionable. She's a nice woman, though. She was so impressed. She came over and rushed over to get a quote from you after you'd spoken.
She came for my name. She didn't ask any questions.
Oh, she didn't. Well, I think your speech spoke for itself, and I don't know. I think we may play it today. Although having you in the studio, I don't think we need to. You're going to be able to speak at greater length on the same subject. But in order to prompt you, to give you some, real, I don't know what you might say, a poke in the ribs, I'm going to play for you some of the Downtown Commission in a moment. Downtown Commission is the group that is appointed by the City Council to cook up these kinds of laws, or at least it's the group that's supposed to give a thoughtful examination of these kinds of laws.
Before you begin that, let me address one of the things that you said and why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
The democratic process in this society is a really, really tough business for the average citizen. You got to come down and you got to sit around for about 4 hours in order to be able to give a three-minute speech with no possibility for interchange between you and the council unless they decide so. And then, if you're really concerned, you need to stay around for another 2 hours to hear what they had to say. It's a brutal process. It's a dead evening. And, folks, it's worthwhile. Don't just watch it on TV. If things are getting out of bound, out of hand, or headed in the wrong direction for this town, this city, and this country, I want you all to come down and wait your 4 hours and say your 3 minutes piece, and let's try and get things moving in the right direction.
Chuck, you're more of an idealist than I am. I actually find that there are some benefits, not necessarily the council will hear or respond to anything you said, though I think actually two council members did hear and respond. Ed Porter and Mike Rotkin ended up voting against this law. Rotkin surprised me. Porter said he was going to vote for it, but became undecided and decided he was going to vote against it towards the end. So citizen comment can have an impact. Apparently not enough of an impact yet, and that's the question whether in 2 weeks we can stop this law when it comes back for a second reading. I guess it's a week from Tuesday and Tuesday evening, and then you might want to follow Chuck's advice. If you can't get down to City Council, I definitely would urge you to contact City Council by phone. The number is relatively easy to call. They have a voicemail message system that will allow you to speak to them now, 420-5020 is their number, 420-5020, and then you either talk to the entire council or you can talk to a particular council member. The two members who are most likely to change their votes, if at all, although not terribly likely, are Mayor Emily Riley and Councilmember Tony Madrigal. I think the other three, Robinson, Matthews, and Coonerty, are pretty set in their positions. And you might want to congratulate or firm up the positions of Mike Rotkin and Ed Porter, who voted as they voted against it. Go ahead.
Particularly Tony Madrigal. He does live a simple life, as I do, and therefore he is very well aware of the value of a public arena and public assembly. Furthermore, he wanted to put a six-month constraint on this law, and I don't think it's really clear in his mind that there are no temporary taxes and no temporary laws once the signs are up and enforcement has begun. I feel it's over for this law. I don't feel they rescind it. So it'd be good if we could stop it now.
Yeah, the council, some council member always says, oh, we can look at this later and change it if we want. And in fact, this law was passed a year ago for the parking garages, where it also has no business being in place. If you look at the stats they use in terms of crime, the concerns they had, the idea of removing the garages from public use completely as an alternative to, say, I don't know, increase better lighting, cell phones for people who are working there, maybe increase patrols, to me is preposterous and just an example of a kind of a police state mentality, which suggests, you know, the not only do we want more police, but we want to make every person her own police officer. So you do the job of the police officer by saying, no, I can't go here, I can't go there, I have to move from here, and so forth.
I want to say that I would disagree with Robert on the parking structures. I have a sense of them as private property. I know that they did provide shelter for people who are homeless. But the flat lots are very much a public space. We have musicians playing under the tree outside the market. One of the lots is actually the front yard of the University of California there. And when those students come out, are they in a parking lot or are they still in the university? And where's the dividing line on that?
Yeah, you're referring to lot number 4, which is next to the farmer's market and right behind Logos Bookstore and UCSC.
Yeah, and the lot where I used to like to lay in my van between events when I had a lull and read my paper and meditate.
Well, you know, a number of the lots, there are four. I'm going to talk about the garages because I think they should have not only annulled this law, the garage aspect to it, but they also need to open up more public spaces that are closed to public, like the parks. The parks are closed at night. You're not allowed to go into the parks at night unless you transit directly through them. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, it's sort of on the margin of my memory. I want to talk about your mention of a police state. I want to talk about the police for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the police are kind of unusual guys. I can't imagine doing that job. Mm-hmm. They're an intimidating presence. They have a serious sidearm and some serious vehicles with some serious weapons in them. And they are required to enforce the law. And the more uncivil the laws are, the more classist the laws are, the more down on the homeless the laws are, the more callous and brutal the police have to become in their own personal psychology. And this is not developing a perspective that we want. The homeless are the most vulnerable among us, and they should be the first charge of the police. It should be the job of the police to protect the least among us, and that means homeless. Make sure they can sleep safely, make sure they don't get harassed by the shopping public, and make sure that they have some semblance of a quality of life given their limited circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, your idealism shows through. I think that, you know, police almost without exception, historically, except in very revolutionary situations, are probably one of the more reactionary forces that are concerned with enforcing the privileges and powers of the rich and kicking the ass out of the poor, so depending on the preferences of the people in power who direct them around. That's been my general sense of not just our police force, which I like the cops, particularly as individuals. They're fine people. I don't know if they're fine people. I mean, they're amenable people. I don't have anything against police officers, per se, and we're actually on... how would you put it? Companionable terms. We chatter with each other. We joke. I interview police officers. You know, they don't. Some of them are bitter towards me because they don't like the fact that I regard a lot of the prior upper brass as having really the wrong priorities and getting too much public funding for the wrong kinds of purposes. But the problem with the police force for me and police forces generally is they have a kind of a military code which transcends the individual conscience. And maybe you need this in an organization, you know, to keep things rolling and to make things equitable to some extent. But it tends to transform the mentalities and the behaviors of the people who get into those uniforms and guns often. You know, I don't like, I mean, it even transforms those of us who are talking about it because I think we get intimidated by it. We feel we somehow have to say, oh, yeah, you know, like I just said, oh, the police force, they're really great guys, but... Maybe we don't have to say they're great guys. Sometimes people are great, sometimes they're not. The real question is this job they're doing something that they should be doing? And you and I certainly probably agree. Parking lots, at least, I would say garages too, and other areas of town, are not something where they should be clearing out, frankly, anybody unless they're engaging in criminal activity. That's my view.
We're pretty far afield of the stated topic for this thing, but I do want to carry on for a moment about the police.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of their job is set by the tone of the society. The tone of society now, according to the Sentinel and the Chronicle, is that we pay three times as much for prisons in California as we do for the University of California system. And within a few years, all California educational systems will be receiving less money than the prison system. This is an authoritarian and a despicable approach to the natural problems that are occurring as a result of global events and events within our society. The answer is not to step on it. But the police are being asked to do that, and in order to keep their job, that's what they're going to do. And frankly, even in an enlightened society, the police are going to be a little on the tough side because there are some very dangerous people out there, and it is their job to deal with them also, and that's dangerous work. And no, they're not all good guys. They're good guys and bad guys in every job. There's the good, the bad, the beautiful, you know? I mean, they're human beings.
Again, as I said, I think my point of view is different. I mean, again, I do appreciate the fact that we want to talk about the particular topic we're talking about, which is this particular law, this parking lot trespass law, parking lots and garages trespass law, as the city calls it, or the parking lot panic law, as I like to call it, because I think it's a panic rather than based on any significant showing of any real crime or even a solution to the crimes that actually do exist there. But I disagree with you, and again, I'm just repeating myself. I think it's not just a matter of good cops and bad cops. It's a matter of the actual system itself creating a mentality which tends to skew people to the bad side and also to the silent side. They don't snitch on each other. You know, they maintain a code of silence. Corruption continues in police departments. Brutality continues until it is exposed from the outside or by the occasional whistleblower.
We're not that far away in our agreement that the system shapes the police force, and let's let them go for a little bit.
Okay.
And get back to the subject and the question of free assembly. Democracy was created in Greece in public forums, people getting together and talking to each other. The basis and beauty of Santa Cruz and a desirable society is the right to public assembly, people meeting in public, large and diverse groups of people. There's very little room for this. The parking lots has been part of that, I think a valuable part. I'm really going to miss the musicians under the tree. I'm really going to miss lying in my van. I mean, I'm going to lie in my van on the street. And with regard to that, I think at a certain point it's reasonable to push back, and I would like to suggest a parking lot protest, and I want to encourage everybody to park on Pacific and hang in your car there and pay the full hour. It'll cost you a buck. Ask as many friends as you can. In fact, if you can find particularly derelict cars to do that, it would be even better to remind people of the class structure and nature of this law. We have a cutoff point in society where we talk about the needs of the individual, and it stops right about the teacher-cop level. We never talk about caregivers. We never talk about the working poor. We never talk about the barista. We never talk about people below that, what used to be sort of middle-income level. And that decision is the class decision that is shaping our laws now and destroying our opportunity to create a compassionate, forward-thinking, and practical society.
You're listening to Free Radio. That's Chuck Huddleston speaking a moment ago. I'm Robert Norris, and this is 101.1 FM. You can call in if you have something you want to contribute or a question, or perhaps you have a different opinion on this. 427-3772 is the call-in number. The law that we're talking about, for those who don't know, is an expansion of, and actually a repetition of, a law that went to City Council last summer and was cut back from including all garages and parking lots, surface parking lots in the downtown area, all public garages and surface parking lots. Private lots and garages are not affected, making it illegal to actually linger at all in these lots or garage. You can't even enter a garage, actually, unless you have a vehicle or bicycle there. And if you are a person with a bicycle or car and you're parking it, or part of a party, let's say, that's with that car, you can only stay there for 15 minutes in the process of parking or picking up your vehicle. There are three exceptions. One is if you're a parking lot attendant or worker, I should say, a city employee, I think it is, and that means you can do whatever you want in the parking lots. The second is if you are disabled, you get 30 minutes instead of half an hour to get your butt out of the parking lot. Get through that book fast. You know, don't wait too long for your children to come out of the movie. Whatever you're doing, because you only have a certain amount of time, go park on the street and pay a meter, as Chuck has put it. And the third exception is an obscure exception that actually was included, at the request of Rotkin last summer, which talks about free speech posted areas. There are no such areas, of course, at the present time.
Very Republican concept.
You know, right. Let's have a little protest pen over here 5 miles away from the action. And actually, what I was told by Matt Farrell, who was the parking guy, the parking czar, replaced by, I think his name is Marlon Granlund now, that the area where CJ Stock plays music across from Clouds in the parking garage, where he still plays occasionally, and the police ignore him, they selectively enforce the law, is the so-called free speech zone. But it's not posted, and it's not written down anywhere. And Farrell's claim was that this one zone is the free speech zone for all four garages, which is completely ridiculous. I mean, if you want to give out literature to people in a garage, that should be your right to walk through a garage and give out literature. It's not private. It's open to the public. Your taxes are paying for it. It's open to the community. The idea that you somehow are suspicious for being there, I just can't agree with you, Chuck, about that. That should be closed to the public, except for cars and people parking.
The free street zone is called America.
Exactly. And the garages are part of it, as far as I'm concerned. So this law came to City Council through the Downtown Commission. And it came to City Council Tuesday night. It was the last item on the agenda. It was item number 20. The discussion lasted, 45 minutes to an hour. And we had I was sad to see there was nobody from the ACLU there. Sheila Coonerty of the Downtown Commission, the only person who voted against it in the Downtown Commission, the body that sent it to the City Council, did show up. She actually came down. She got dressed and came down to speak to the City Council. She was so concerned about the issue. Last time she voted for it, or she voted for the garages, maybe perhaps for the same reason that you might have, Chuck, if you were on the commission, that you speak possibly in favor of that part of the law.
No,
perhaps not. But her point was that she thought, you know, garages are more kind of shadowy areas, and maybe there's more perception of danger there. I was pretty carefully examining the stats last summer when they came up with this garages thing. It's an expansion of police power based upon a desire to make a certain class of people feel more comfortable. But from the discussion that you and I heard, or at least that I heard, I think that it was, as Sheila Coonerty put it, and very eloquently, we'll hear her, if not tonight, we'll hear her on Sunday when the show comes for its second edition on, it comes 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 9 in the morning, 9:30 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, she said, there's some people you're not going to please. There's some people who are going to be scared and feel unwelcome and uncomfortable downtown because of the nature of some of the people who hang out there. And if you want to please them by removing those people from the downtown, you are doing something that is going to be significantly different than what Santa Cruz has done in the past, or maybe not. Maybe in a certain way there was a conservative time when they did this kind of stuff. They burned the Chinese out. You know, they'd gotten rid of the Mexicans. The Japanese got ousted. Blacks have been, you know, lynched. I don't know about Santa Cruz, but in other towns, small towns, towns in the north, you wouldn't have thought this happened. It happens. They have sundown towns. Maybe we're returning to a more traditional Santa Cruz. What do you think of that, Chuck?
What I think is I want to encourage people to come down and address this issue, and I want to go back to a more broad philosophical base than the purpose-directed conversation that Mr. Robert Norris is so good at, and I applaud that, and you do need to go into details. However, my concern is free assembly. It's not about lying down in the back of my car. I'm still going to do that. I know paid parking places where I've done that. It's not as nice to lie down in a car on the street as it is in a parking lot. And I really only do it to kill time because I don't want to sit in Starbucks for 2 hours and use up their space because business space is expensive, and I want to have the turnover to sell their coffee. And so out of politeness, I go to my vehicle instead of hanging in a local business and depriving future customers of an opportunity to be there. Now, customers make the same argument about shopping, but listen, Santa Cruz doesn't belong to the locals. It doesn't belong to the councils. It belongs to California and the world. Tourists come from all over the world to come here, and they don't go to Scotts Valley, which is a nice, clean, safe, well-lighted place to shop without feeling any guilt about the presence of homeless people around. We're unique, we're colorful, we're hippie, we're surfer, we have an art scene, we have a beautiful beach. We need to be a live and vibrant place. We've got people moving downtown. They want the nightlife. They want the variety. They want to be able to meet people. My goal is to get most of Pacific closed, to have a walking promenade and a meeting place for people to hang out, break dance, play music, talk to each other. And folks, the poor people, they're people just like you. How they got there, everyone's got a different story, just like you got a different story about how where you got. But we're all going to have to be working together to solve the actual real problems before us. And, you know, forget NIMBYism, Prop 13 killed California. Life in the pursuit of happiness is a teenager's philosophy. We got real issues here. We got resource shortages. We got global warming. We got housing shortages. Goes all the way back to McCarthy. The history of that is deep and complex. Right now, people are seriously trying to make this a forward-looking city, and they're not looking at the service personnel, and they're not looking, including the homeless, in that dialogue, in that conversation, in that family. Until we do so, we're really in trouble. And a good way to do that is encourage the right to assembly, and a good way to do that is protest this parking lot ban by assembling on Pacific.
So you're suggesting people kind of do this as a kind of a spontaneous action without any particular organization. You're not announcing a time for people to come down and do this, just a general suggestion.
That's right. Yeah. It would be nice to focus on like a Saturday because it's a buck an hour, and I can't go down there and park for 8 hours to make a point, because one car parking for 8 hours doesn't make a point.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I would recommend that, that this Saturday and next, the two Saturdays before this becomes law, you know, I think if enough people present their thoughts on this and get their vehicles down there and park there, you will find, you might even get a brief nod from the Sentinel, who knows, or at least the merchants will notice it. I know that, and I don't know if Chuck agrees with the protest in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz about the sleeping ban and so forth, where Vice Mayor Coonerty is, you know, chief worker there, and he will soon be, I presume, mayor. He's been a big supporter of that, I regard as a really clearly anti-homeless law. But it has been noticed, and because it, I think that this could also be noticed, though it's, you know, I think even if the law passes, it's quite possible to make it a dead letter by doing this kind of stuff, by showing that the citizenry is more concerned with the right to assemble than it is with simply, you know, lying down and rolling over and playing dead.
Vice Mayor Coonerty was an interesting person to me. My belief is he's got some hard lessons to learn before he's a fully grown human being. I'd say that of his sister, who I saw down protesting the raise in the minimum wage here in Santa Cruz.
She's the one who, I think, technically owns the bookstore with Neil Coonerty, her father, the supervisor.
These people have a very sort of, appear to have a very limited sort of classist perspective. Mm-hmm. And they're going to outgrow that. And I don't mind if people want to help be their teachers. I wouldn't advise interfering with their business, but if you want to park particularly around their store, since they're particularly enthusiastic about this law. I mean, to quote Mr. Coonerty, I believe he said, if we got a problem, we'll legislate. And if they have another problem, we'll make some more legislation. And frankly, that's a fascist statement.
Now, wait a minute. He's a constitutional lawyer. How can you call a constitutional lawyer a man who makes fascist statements? Surely you're being unfair to our vice mayor.
I think he's working on the wrong constitution.
A grand council of the grand muftis, perhaps? The corporate body of Italy of 1928? I don't know.
You know, I don't even know the guy. And after this, I'm probably not going to either. I'm not sure we'd hang together anyway. But he really does need to grow up and understand that everybody is beautiful. That this world is full of light, and that includes the poor and the beat up and the drug addict and the hooker and the cop and the bookstore owner and everybody else. It's not just for the guy who's got a house in the burbs.
All right, well, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. Since we aren't getting any calls from the burbs and we aren't getting any calls from Ryan Coonerty and the Downtown Association, but I do note that online, if you go to the Sentinel online, and you look at the story by Shanna McCord, which appeared in today's paper. It's online. It has a different title than it does in the actual paper version of the Sentinel. Online, it's new loitering law in downtown Santa Cruz likely to push problems elsewhere. While as here in the print version, it's faults seen in parking lot loitering ordinance. Most agree new law will likely just shift problems elsewhere. And the actual body of the story is the same. And it's very interesting because Shanna McCord talks about everybody agreeing, both supporters and the opponents of this law, that it's going to move the problems elsewhere. It's not going to solve the problems. And she focuses on this, which, of course, is something the police didn't like. She said Zach Friend gave her a call, the police department, and didn't like the fact that she said it. And Ryan Coonerty called her and complained about the story. So Shannon is usually, I've called her the watch poodle of the Sentinel or the police conduit, because she often takes a position that seems to me to be very much a reflection of a very conservative mindset and a handout from the police department. Here, this story is considerably different. But the point I was making here, and I wish I could get to it, is if I can get myself to get to it, is as of now, this story has been online for a day. It, usually these stories show up like in the the latter part of the previous day, they'll start, the story will show up on online. And there were about 12 comments yesterday, which were deleted comments. You see, if you look at the story, I'm showing, kind of trying to show it to Chuck here in the studio, you see that there are 117 comments on this story, which it's a pretty significant number of comments for a story, though. I think Madrigal Brouhaha got 250 or something. But for a day, to have 117 comments since the story first appeared, minus, yeah, I got to add 12 more to that, that's 129, that's a lot of comments. And a number of these are very critical of homeless protesters, homeless people, supportive of the city council's position. They should go further, run the bums out of town. I'll give you an example of a comment. Like, maybe you might want to respond to it or not, as the case may be. I won't even go downtown anymore, writes Anonymous. This is the first person who writes on this comment. It's way too disgusting. I don't feel safe with my family. You want me to stop? Go ahead.
Yeah. I want to tell you what I did today. I am trying to film a parking protest on Pacific. And so in order to begin that, I drove down here this morning about 10:30, and I walked down the street, and I talked to every person who looked like they might be hanging on the street, whether they're homeless or they just look like they know how to sit on a bench. And I said, you know, if you know anybody who's got a car, or if you know anybody who knows anybody who's got a car, I want to encourage you to ask them to come down here and park it on Pacific and inconvenience the businesses that are trying to drive you people out of town. And I'll tell you what I learned from that process. I never talk to these people. I give them a dime once in a while. Every one of them is different. Some of them are confused. All of them were nice to me. Nobody was mean. It didn't feel dangerous. I felt humbled.
I feel humbled listening to you talk about it, because it's impressive that one individual would go out and do such a thing, and thank you for doing that, Chuck.
My pleasure.
But getting back to Anonymous and what he has to say, I know a lot of people feel the same way. Too bad Santa Cruz has such potential. At least they took a good first step in passing this law. Now they need to clean out all of downtown. And Anonymous senses, whatever people have the right to hang out, whatever people have the right to hang out, they have the right as long as they're not doing things to others. I went to, anyway, it's interesting, the distinction here. I mean, a person can have that point of view. I always ask people who have a hostile or negative or bad experience downtown, tell me about it. Let's hear about it. Because I'm not saying you're wrong. Your own experience, your own feelings are what they are. You can't, I'm not going to say that you aren't honestly describing how you feel. But the question is, you know, what were the circumstances? How frequently have you been downtown? How many people have you talked to downtown? How broad a generalizing are you doing from one or two cases? And you'll often hear merchants or people who support these kinds of no loitering laws or the downtown ordinances which preceded them, which say you can't sit within 14 feet of a building, you can't, you know, set up a display for more than an hour, you have to move it along. I don't know if you know about these downtown ordinances, you probably do. They say, well, these are necessary because people get... Any person who has a bad experience at all won't come back to the downtown, and that will detract from our business. What do you say to this, sir?
I know some of the ordinances. I think, actually, I've been thinking recently they should paint a line on the sidewalk, you know, where you can sit, because it's like 14 feet from doors and windows and ashtrays and whatever. It would be quite artistic to see where the line actually goes. It would be a serpentine flow down each sidewalk on Pacific Avenue.
The person who tried to do that was given a ticket for doing it in erasable chalk.
Robert, let me say, I do understand that there are some unpleasant experiences possible and available in confrontation with anybody in public. This is not going to go away. And frankly, we do need to clean up downtown. We need to clean up that sort of really horribly solipsistic, nasty, I'm right, everybody else is wrong attitude on the part of the local neighborhoods, on the part of the NIMBYs, on the part of the people who don't want anything built, anything changed, who want people to get out of town, put it back to the way it was 30 years ago. Leave me alone. I'm a property owner. I'm a business owner. I have power in this city. I am right. You are wrong. If you're not with me, go away. That's what needs cleaning up.
I'm with you there, unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be. I look at a lot of these comments, and rather than read through them, and I haven't done a very selective process before coming on the show, so I can't pick out the worst or the best or the ones that are most succinct. Though I, for example, put a comment there, and you can too. You just go to the Sentinel website, you go to the story, and then you click on comments, and you can write your comment. They tend to remain. They did, as I said, eliminate the first 12, but I think they do that in the preliminary story. One person emailed me, I'm so discouraged, I'm not going to do anything, these people are bigots, what are we going to do? I just feel completely demoralized. What's your response to that kind of feeling.
My response is, we're going to help them out as best we can. Here's the reality. I'm not a Christian. I'm a Hindu. But you always go back to the old Christian sayings because you're raised with those. Christ says, what you do for the least of me, you do for me. Transpose a little bit and say, what you do to the least of you, you do to me as well. We're all part of each other. And the more people you deny, the more classes you deny, the more possible realities you deny, you're cutting yourself off the neck. You're depriving yourself of seeing actually yourself in others. And you're there, believe me. Look in somebody else's eyes, and that's your truth. And the more eyes you look at, and the more open your eyes are when you look, the bigger your heart's going to be, the happier your life is going to be, and the more productive a citizen you're going to be, and the nicer town this is going to be.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm talking with, or actually talking to me, is Chuck Huddleston, local resident. We're talking about the parking lot trespass law, which was passed its first reading at City Council on Tuesday night, comes back a week from Tuesday in the evening, probably, for a second reading and final reading after that. If it passes again, it will go into effect a month later. Chuck here has proposed that people, in order to demonstrate their opposition to this law, park downtown. Ah, could be a caller calling in, unless I'm hearing bells in my head. Now, I should say we are expecting some calls on other subjects, so don't go away unless you feel you have to leave. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Chuck and Robert.
Oh, hi. This is Becky, and welcome to Chuck Huddleston. I'm very glad that you came into the studio and to tell us more after listening to you at City Council last night. I was quite cheered by your comments, and I think it was... Councilmember Porter even referred to your comments in his no vote. So you were quite persuasive last night. I'd like to hear more about this idea of that you have of bringing cars and parking them on Pacific Avenue. Isn't that it costs a lot of money at the meters?
It costs $1 an hour, and I like people to focus on the intention that public gathering is what enlivens this town and makes it what it is, and that we're there to be together. We're not there to be irritants. We're not there to be militant. We're not there to be confrontational. And frankly, we are there so that the spur-of-the-moment shoppers that the businesses would like all of us to be will have to go park in the parking lots in the back before they can walk over and buy something. It's a little bit of economic pressure, mm-hmm. but it's to a good cause.
Just to discuss this a little more, wouldn't opposing this 15-minute law in the parking lot, wouldn't it be better to have the protest in the parking lot?
I tell you what, that's an option. Mm-hmm. But I am the most law-abiding citizen that you're ever going to run into, and I feel we're all in this together. We can talk about this. We can do this without civil insurrection, particularly at this point. And if it gets to that, I'm probably not going to join because I can watch this town go down the drain. So many places in America are. Look at our government.
Well this is what I was thinking. You know, one of the strongest civil rights we have is registering voters. And if we went into these parking lots and registered voters for longer than 15 minutes, then that would trigger a citation. And we take the citation to court and get the whole law nullified.
Might work. What do you think, Chuck?
Robert's the expert on that. I understand it's an infraction. It's a breaking the trespassing law. The ticket's over $200.
I think it's $225. I asked for clarification when I spoke myself, and, of course, I got none. They don't like to say how much those tickets are, but usually an infraction ticket is, about $162? For some reason, this is a unique thing, a trespassing law. Usually a trespassing law is a misdemeanor. So they've made a special breed of trespassing law that's an infraction, but it's a super infraction higher cost.
Let me say this to you. Come on down and party with us the next couple of Saturdays, and let's try and keep it peaceable and clean. And if they pass it again, then maybe it's time to get hard-nosed about it.
I'm one of the cleanest and most peaceable people you know.
I got to point out, Becky, that you sometimes have a mean piece of chalk and you draw hopscotch on the sidewalk, which the police, the hosts definitely don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't know. You're corrupting the youth here.
It's my freedom of speech, man.
freedom of speech. Well, there's pre-Coonerty and post-Coonerty freedom of speech. You have to kind of, you know, be careful about that.
I understand that the city has a different opinion about that, but the city is not the one that enforces the Constitution.
You mean the city, the city politicians, is what you're talking about.
I mean, I know they're all sworn to, every last one of them are sworn to enforcing the Constitution, but they certainly are against peaceable assembly. They certainly are against freedom of speech, certainly with my talking on sidewalk and the way that they've used the police and the courts to stifle my freedom of speech in that manner and everybody else's. Not to mention every little kid in the city that wants to hopscotch. I mean, geez, you know, are they for childhood obesity? I mean, what's their problem?
The
no fun zone.
Chalk Zone is kind of fun. I'm not familiar with their artistic path. That's certainly another very silly law. But rather than dividing our forces and perhaps allowing them to conquer, why don't we all like focus on one protest for the next couple of weeks and see if it goes anywhere?
I'm totally for that.
Thank you very much.
I'll be listening in. I may call back.
All right. Thank you, Becky.
Bye.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. We have a humble protester here is looking for other humble protesters. 427-3772 is a phone number to call, or just steer your jalopy down to Pacific Avenue, maybe in the vicinity of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, maybe in front of the Downtown Association, which is the headquarters of the Downtown Association is right next to Starbucks, in case you know Starbucks across from the Coffee Roasting Company. Now, I got to say to you, Chuck, that you may remember what Ryan Coonerty said, that this doesn't this smack you as a kind of discrimination against merchants for, you know, presenting their political opinions and interfering with their businesses by bringing these questionably unsightly vehicles downtown and taking up valuable parking spaces?
His actions and this law are part of a conscious or unconscious class war. I'm not going to impute conscious motive to him. But in fact, the powers that be and the powers that want to be in this community would really only like to see clean, nice shoppers. And we're a multitude. We're a variety. And we're what makes Santa Cruz beautiful. And I think it's good to remind the people downtown that we are here also, whether we're poor, whether our cars are not very pretty, whether our clothes may not be clean this week. I think we need to become more visible and say, you know, look, we're human. We like each other. We like being in the sunlight. We like Santa Cruz. We want our rights to assembly, and that's what we're protesting. You're having taken them away from five city blocks.
Okay, well, I'm going to be a police officer now and suggest to you that what you're doing is you're removing a tool from the police arsenal, if you will, which is needed to deal with problems that are in the process of developing. This is, in the mind of some of the police officers, a preemptive ordinance. We're attempting to stop crime before it starts so that, you know, you may see some kids, they're drinking. By the time the cop gets down there and they put away their drink, perhaps the person who witnesses isn't going to hang out and file a complaint. The cop comes through the parking lot, and the kids are just kind of going, oh. Now, with this new law, they can cop and say, you've been here for 15 minutes, get out. Or if you're not gone in 15 minutes, or a cop can say it's illegal to be here unless you have a car at all. And although how the cop can get them to, and maybe a cop can get them to admit they don't have a car and get them to leave. And I got to say, the police have said, you know, that this law has been in force for a year in parking lot number 9, the parking lot across from the homeless meal at the Elm Street Mission on Elm Street between Pacific Avenue and Cedar Street, behind the Catalyst in the Union Grove Music area, if you know that area. And they've had only 2 citations, and they've given out 40 warnings, and it's worked very well. What's your problem, Mr. Huddleston? Are you just intent on destroying business downtown? Is that the problem?
Well, first off, Robert, you're a disingenuous and unrealistic police officer. You're not cut out for the work, and I don't think you're coming off the way one would talk to me. I have a pretty good relationship with police officers, and if I'm approached with that subject, I'm going to go to the broader philosophical context. I'm going to say, I don't want you guys to have to be enforcing classist laws. I know it's a tool. If you sterilize the parking lots, life's a little simpler for you. If you sterilize the whole town, it's even more simple. But what I want you really to do is focus on taking care of these people and making their lives safe, because they are the most vulnerable members of the society. And I want the city council to encourage you to go back to serious crime and see if you can drive some of the heroin out of this city. I had a cousin who died of heroin, and believe me, the dealers just float around with ready availability. They have meetings out at the foot of Ocean Street. Last time I heard, you know, monthly to try and cut down on shootings and drug trafficking. You guys have got a tough and a serious job to do, and frankly, it's brutalizing your personal psychology to have to go and chase poor people around.
Mr. Huddleston, we aren't going to be chasing poor people around. We have no interest in chasing poor people around. We haven't given, we've only given out two tickets. We don't chase poor people around. This law has worked remarkably well in Cedar and in the Elm Street lot number 9 and in the 4 parking garages. It's resulted in a cleaner, safer area, and frankly, you know, it puts us in a situation where we don't have to give it a ticket. We just show up and we say, look, you know, you're not supposed to be here, and they leave. Now, indeed, the problem may go elsewhere, but we're going to deal with that through other means. What we're saying is you can't do it here. We're drawing a line in the sand. What's the matter with that?
You didn't draw the line. The city council drew the line. We're trying to get them to undraw it because we don't really think it works. And if you like my reasons for that, you can go listen to Free Radio. I gave a quite a few little sentences on that.
You don't believe anything that Norse guy says, do you?
You know, I don't know this Norse guy. I do admire his willingness to continue to be active in the interests of those who are least among us. And I do appreciate his patience in the face of the council's pronounced tendency to say some of the most egregious things to him when he's no longer able to speak in response. I think that's really bad behavior on the part of the council. I would like them to amend their courtesy. You know, I have heard Robert get out of line a couple times and, you know, say a few strong words, but given the pressures of his job and the nature of his training, I can understand it.
Well, the police department, you know, is involved in trying to create a safer and more appealing downtown. And we've amassed the statistics that, in essence, show you that there are problems in the parking lots. There are burglaries, there are thefts, there's drug use. These are problems that we can, you know, waste our time, or not wasting our time, but spend our time trying to patrol each of these lots. Or we can say, look, these are lots for cars, for bicycles, for people to come and park their cars and bicycles and then leave. And that makes it much simpler, because the community generally then knows people who are just hanging out in these lots have no business being there if they're not engaging in the function for which the lots were created. Now, what's the problem here?
I don't really like playing devil's advocate because it's a child's imaginary game. I like talking reality to real people and their real perspectives rather than talking to somebody who's pretending to be somebody else. In fact, the points that you have raised are the points that have been raised by the city council, and I understand that that is representative of a view that needs to be confronted.
I invited Zach Friend to come into the studio, but unfortunately
But we're going to do a lot better just talking to each other as human beings and trying to sort this out. And frankly, I still say the beauty of Santa Cruz is the hippies, it is the musicians, it is the homeless people, it is the Japanese tourists, it is Chuck reading his paper in his van.
You're on Free Radio with Chuck and Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Skidmark.
Hey, Skidmark.
I can't talk too long, but I just wanted to bring up the issue of Food Not Bombs on Wednesdays at the farmer's market. So I see this issue affecting Food Not Bombs serving on Wednesdays, so like to hear what you guys have to say about that. I got to go. Sorry.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, bye.
All right. Yeah, Food Not Bombs, of course, serves in parking lot number 4, one of the lots that I understand you have been known to sleep in or read magazines or newspapers in, meditate, perhaps.
Meditate. I don't sleep in the lots down here.
I would hope not. I mean, sleeping is a crime after 11 o'clock at night, and let's not forget that. Okay?
And I don't understand the camping laws well enough to not be afraid of the police.
People like yourself who have these foreign philosophies, Hinduism, whatever they are, I mean, I understand how you have the problems picking up on our local customs. But the fact of the matter is, anyway, parking lot number 4, all kidding aside, is a lot that will soon be, actually, I think they're going to build over parking lot number 4. That's their plan. There's going to be a building in there, just like they're building now across from the Cafe Bene down near the old Asian Rose, if you know where that area was.
Yes. A horrible building, by the way.
What's that?
A really horrible building, by
well,
the way.
Well, indeed. I guess Ron Lau wanted to have a green building, but they didn't want that to happen. Lau tried to hold the line, but he failed.
Too big, too modern, too ugly.
And, well, such a critic of our redevelopment agency and our city administration. I don't know what to do with you, Chuck.
I like these guys. I talk to him. I like Greg Larson, the new development manager. He's got a tough city to buck and to work with. He's got this city council, who is certainly not forward-looking. I think he's trying to do a darn good job.
Well, the answer about until the area gets built over, what will happen is, it will be illegal to have for Food Not Bombs to operate in any of the public parking lots unless they get a permit. That was the additional exception I didn't mention initially. If you go get a permit, then theory and in practice, I imagine, you'll be able to use the parking lots. That's not what Food Not Bombs traditionally has done. I myself have always refused to get permits because I feel they impose an unnecessary level of bureaucracy and allow particularly cities that are interested in this anti-homeless agenda, this class agenda that I think you and I agree is actually going down downtown, them opportunity to move in and implement it. They did that in San Francisco with Food Not Bombs. I actually served a month in jail for serving free food in 1996. After the city cut off the whole permit process and misrepresented it in court and arrested over 1,000 people over the course of a number of years. And the only way we had of dealing with it was, I wouldn't call it insurrection because we didn't use any weapons other than rice and beans, and we didn't throw the rice and beans. We served the rice and beans and the bagels and the salad. But we did so illegally. We did so in violation of the injunction. The police arrested us. They handcuffed us. They took us to jail. And they're still doing that. And they were doing that in Orlando, Florida, as recently as 2 months ago, although that was overturned by the courts. It doesn't get overturned unless people like yourself. And you don't have to be a violator of the law to do it. You can use other means, too. But the determination to remind the community or just to continue with a sensible course of action is so important that it moves me to even think about it. So 427-3772 is the number here in the studio, 831-427-3772, if you're not in the area. We are streaming at www.freakradio.org, and this show is archived in case you want to tune in into it later, in case you wish to review it, at www.huffsantacruz.org, which is the website for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, website that has a lot of interesting material, a lot of it outdated, or actually older, not outdated, since a lot of these nasty laws. This is just the latest in a series of nasty laws, unfortunately, that we're talking about. And I'm, in a way, some of these things can sometimes serve as a catalyst for a counteraction or a reaction, a positive reaction that might actually be a good thing, and turn a bad thing into a more positive thing. So, for instance, the profiling situation. Madrigal's jumped on by the police department when he mentions he doesn't like the triple fine zones because he saw what might have been profiling last year. That was his statement. In response, the entire council and police department gangbang him. The reaction to that has been, I'm going to be talking more about this on Sunday when I'll have Professor Paul Ortiz, I think he's a professor, maybe he's a lecturer up at UCSC. Hopefully he'll be coming in to talk about this issue. I'd hope we'd have someone in here tonight, too, but he hasn't shown up. But the public reaction to this council surrender to the police, this incredible assertion of police power, inappropriate assertion of police power, has been a reaction by the community. Now I'll let you react to that, Chuck.
I want to actually change the subject on you. I want to
be that way.
I want to bring up an economic motivation for everybody. We just hired a guy for like $85,000 a year to try and turn this town and this county into an economic powerhouse, and that can be done. It can't be done by enticing all the .com people to come over here. It can be done by creating this to be the best place to live within 200 miles of Silicon Valley. And the way you do that is you fill it up with happy people. And the way you do that is by being compassionate and practical and solving our problems instead of trying to step on them.
Now, wait a minute. Now, that's a nice idealistic sound to it. But look, I'll use the standard argument we get from people who are even liberals who call into the show and say, you know, you talk about the right of homeless people to sleep at night or the right to use a parking lot, you know, for loitering and lingering and doing stuff that, while not illegal, allows for people who are illegal to kind of hang out too and blend with the illegal people. You don't recognize that Santa Cruz is valuable real estate. It's worth, you know, the value, you know, property may be dropping somewhat, but there's a huge cost to live here now. We acknowledge this has gone up. It's not for the people who don't have money. I'm sorry, if you don't like it, move to Fresno, or Tijuana has some nice housing for you, or maybe you can go to beautiful Sweden or Copenhagen or something. I don't know. I don't know what the prices are there. I hear rumors that you've got to be careful. You don't want to be an illegal immigrant to those countries, but that's another story. Anyway, so what do you do here? I mean, what do you say?
I want to talk to you about wealth. There's a standard kind of wealth. There's the kind of wealth people drive around, and they look at an expensive house, or they look at the expensive car, and they say, what a beautiful car, what a beautiful house. And they don't look at the people in the house. And if they did, would they say, look at that beautiful person? I'm not sure they would. They might have just as much luck looking at the homeless people. I want to invite you to go to a place that goes like this. If you look at it, if you look at the beauty in the world, you'll be tempted to go over and visit. If you go over and visit it, you'll be tempted to live there. If you live there, you're going to be finding your place self living a life of service, simplicity, and humility. And if you go looking for me at the parking lot, don't look for a humble person, because I'm very far away from that. But I can see what's worth doing, and the house and the car aren't it.
Or perhaps look for you on Saturday on Pacific Avenue, downtown parking. We have a caller. Hi there, you're on free radio.
Hello? Hi. I apologize if my cell phone cuts out, but I was listening to the dialogue.
What's your name,
on
caller?
The show today, and it raised a couple of questions that I had.
Caller, let me ask you.
Number one, the policing of the downtown area and how that effect is going to mark our right to assemble peacefully. If indeed we are being more policed, which is usually the case, especially on days when the farmers market is happening, then is our freedom of speech and our right to assemble, in fact, then at risk?
No, they're going to come by and mark your ankle with a different colored chalk every 15 minutes.
I'm sorry?
Chuck was making a joke. He was saying they'll be marking your ankle with a different chalk every 15 minutes, and so everything will be
exactly
in order. I mean,
what kind of speech are we having? Are we talking about politics? Are we talking about, you know, whatever it
well,
is
I'll be the
happening.
Devil's advocate even here, even though Chuck doesn't like it. And I understand
they're
why he doesn't like it.
Monitored.
It's this is because it's an intellectual response.
Public.
Can you hear me?
Santa Cruz.
Hello? Can you hear
Hello?
Me?
Hello?
Yeah, let me. I want to be able to burst in on what you're saying here. And that is that what Ryan Coonerty, the actual, I don't know if you would call him the author, but he is certainly the man who has been pushing this law, the vice mayor, the Bookshop Santa Cruz manager, he has said there is no right to freedom of assembly in a parking lot. It has a particular purpose. It is there for the parking of vehicles and bicycles. And that's what it's for, and that's what it was created for. That's what the taxes went for, and that's what it should be used for. And there, if there are crime problems there, I mean, you don't allow, he makes this analogy, which I think is an improper one. He says, city offices were created with tax dollars, but we don't let people go into city offices just at random and give out flyers and make speeches. That's not, they're not public forum there. The public forums, as he puts it, are in the parks and on the sidewalks. There actually aren't very many places where there are public forum. And in fact, all the parks are closed at night, and 95% of the sidewalk is illegal, for example, to have 100% of the sidewalk is illegal at night to have a sign that says, need food. That's illegal at night if you hold up a sign in Santa Cruz. Anywhere in town has become illegal. So we have lost a lot of freedom of speech and assembly, and we're likely to lose more unless maybe we do stuff like Chuck is suggesting on Saturday and come on down and park our cars and check each other out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my point is exactly laws, and more laws, and now let's watch you and police you. And really, I mean, how is that affecting our quality of life? You know, is it really worth it to mistrust so many people to have my car watched by a police officer? It's not just, you know, so all of these small freedoms that we have on a daily basis are being more and more infringed upon.
But remember, also, caller, that they're not going to increase police patrol.
Chop Santa Cruz would like to protect his vehicle. Now, I have a police officer guarding my vehicle when I'm in Bookshop Santa Cruz. I feel like that's a bit excessive. There are plenty of things
that
can be focusing on. And I think the general population, for the most part, is not interested in vandalizing my vehicle. There's a few bad apples, and that's the case everywhere.
Let me interrupt you. Hello?
Santa Cruz's problems are... in that respect, are minor compared to...
You know, I'm turning down your mic for a second. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello?
Hear you.
Yeah, you can hear me. I'm trying to interject something into what you said. I apologize for doing that. But I want to point out to you that this measure does not provide any extra money for the police. What it does is it suggests we all become our own police officers and start saying, oh, that person is bad. They're in a parking lot. Get out of the parking lot or we'll call the police. In other words, it treats people previously regarded as innocent as guilty of a crime because they're not following the Coonerty rules that will be passed by the city council. So it's not even as though we were in a war zone and you got more police protecting you. They haven't proved it's a war zone. I went through a long argument at city council on this and showed that the crimes are, you know, there are three property crimes in parking lots per month, all the parking lots in the city. By their stats, no more than three, probably less, because they didn't give us the stats. They only gave us the stats in a few parking lots. And if you look at the stats for the same period of time, the last 18 months, there are two crimes against the person in a parking lot. They're not going to, you know, and they gave us no comparison of crimes, let's say, on the sidewalks, crimes in other parts of town. We don't even know that the parking lots are even a focus of crime or any worse or any better than anywhere else. And the question then arises, well, why not have a no loitering law everywhere? You know, if it's good on the parking lots, why isn't it good on the sidewalks? You know, I mean, you know, why not make sure that people hustle to get back to their car in 15 minutes, get their business done, and get moving?
Kind of raises my point. Now, suddenly, yeah. I'm a mandated reporter. I'm expected to police you.
Correct.
How far do we need to go with this? I mean, the idea is that... let's look at the world as a good place. Let's look at people
Thank you very much,
our fellow human beings. Let's not be expecting everybody to be a criminal. Don't make me a police officer. To me, that actually sounds even worse. Okay, so now I'm expected to watch you and make sure that you're not doing anything that would be considered offensive. And now I have to make a judgment call on you and try and understand what a crime might be under, you know, whatever law we're working with.
And I presume you're perfectly clear on the fact that this is a perfect setup for class profiling. The realtor making a cell phone call in their car is not going to get harassed. The tourist I saw the other day with seven bicycles on the back of his pickup was getting ready for his family to ride around Santa Cruz is not going to get harassed. The guy with the beard is going to get harassed. The guy with the old car is going to get harassed.
Then I'm going to do what I need to do. I'm going to contact the police. I'm going to find out, you know, through my insurance agency what I can do about that. There's many, you know, I don't feel that a measure is necessary to protect a parking lot.
Well, caller, I then encourage you to give a call to the Santa Cruz City Council at 420-5020. You can do so from your cell phone, 420-5020, and tell them this is not my idea of a good law. Turn it back. It'll turn me back. And also consider coming down for this protest on Saturday, which essentially is a way of people getting to know each other who might not otherwise get to meet each other and meet some good people, perhaps. Who knows?
Right. No, sounds like an interesting opportunity.
Hey, thank you for what's your name, caller?
My name's Kimberly.
Hey, Kimberly, call again.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm in the studio with Chuck Huddleston, probably the most eloquent speaker of the evening at the Santa Cruz City Council's Item 20. I think I I'm not trying to flatter my guests by saying that. That's kind of my offhand assessment, although, of course, I was the most knowledgeable speaker. But nonetheless, Chuck here has a way with words and a bearing. I mean, he's tall, he's gray-haired, he's distinguished. He's Hindu. Are you Hindu?
Yes.
Yes. So there you have it. A terrorist as well, clearly. Nonviolent, perhaps.
You know, I want to say something about that. I see so many protests of teachers saying they can't live like their mamas and their papas. And after living 6 months in India, I look at these people and I say, oh, stop it.
All right. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio. What's your name?
Hello?
What's your name, caller?
Excuse me?
Hello.
What's your name? Hello, hello. You're on Free Radio.
Yes, sir?
Yes. What's your name?
My name is Vicky Paris.
Say it again.
Vicky, V-I-C-K-Y, Paris, P-A-R-I-S.
What should I call you for short?
Excuse me, we are calling on behalf of the Associated Press and Ipsos Public Affairs.
You're calling on behalf of the Associated Press?
Yes, sir. We are conducting a survey
about the news and other topics. You're calling a live... You were calling a live radio show, and I've just cut you off. Sounds like a telemarketer made it on the air. A shocking situation, I must say. So, please.
Always nice to have callers.
Yeah, it's nice to have callers. 427-3772. Please, somebody call in and block the telemarketers if you can. You know, let me play a little of this not-the-best-quality tape of the Downtown Commission. The Downtown Commission met at 8:30 in the morning on the Thursday, last Thursday of the month of September, and they had previously had meetings where they rejected any changes, making the law any worse. They unfortunately rejected making the law any better by letting us come back into the parking garages, which we do anyway. I mean, in the last year, there have been all kinds of events in the parking garages that have been unsanctioned, square dances, marches through the garages. I walk through the garages and hang out, you know, and... Because they can't really tell. I mean, you know, who knows if you have a car there or not? They can't tell if you have a car unless you're silly enough to answer that or say you have a car there. But anyway, the Downtown Commission held its meeting, and I played most of their tape. And you can review this in earlier Bathrobs Piers broadside shows at www.huff Santa Cruz. Here is the last part of their tape, just simply for those who aren't able to get to this Downtown Commission meeting, which eventually voted 6-1 in favor of making it illegal to walk into a parking lot, any of the downtown surface public parking lots, unless you have a car or vehicle, and then you have to leave within 15 minutes. Here's a little of that tape, and we're going to be pausing as Chuck makes comments, and I make comments as well. And perhaps you make comments, 427-3772.
We're at 10:10 now. We're going to have to go away to get to the vote. Is everybody supportive of sticking around until we get to the point? Okay, let's start with Joe and June Hoffman.
And this is June Hoffman, who's a member of the Downtown Commission. She also runs or co-runs Hoffman's Bakery downtown. She's a merchant, and she supports the law.
Not everyone's comfortable speaking. I would just...
Whoops, I'm sorry. That's a Joe of Atlantis Fantasy World who's speaking there. He's another merchant downtown who's another member of the Downtown Commission who voted for this piece of trash. Excuse me, this fine trespass law.
There are people here that did not speak. I'm wondering if we can ask for a show of hands if they came to support either side, pro or con, of the ordinance, set out the ordinance, just by show of hands.
Okay, is there anyone here that did not speak that is in favor of the amendment to the ordinance? Good. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Is that right? 8. Is there anyone that did not speak that opposes the amendment to the ordinance? 1.
So what happened here was Joe asked for a showing of how many people in the audience who didn't speak at the oral communications line in the Downtown Commission about this ordinance. And it was the only item on their agenda, incidentally. They didn't have an item about public bathrooms. They didn't have an item about better mediation services downtown. They didn't have an item about dealing with, you know, problems involving selective enforcement. No, they had an item about only this law. So there was a very narrow agenda. They found that 9 people in the audience supported this, and they were all merchants, probably coming from the Downtown Association meeting, or, you know, directed there after the Downtown Association had a meeting, which I was not told about. In the past, Downtown Association Executive Director Keith Holtaway has gotten back to me, or somebody in his group, and I've learned that they have a meeting, and I come and I make a presentation saying, you really want this crazy law, and they at least talk about it. This time, they didn't tell any homeless advocates. They didn't tell anybody on the other side that I don't know if they did or they didn't. They didn't contact me or anyone I know. But there was one merchant who said he did not like this law, and I had him on the air a week ago, and that was the owner of Badass Coffee. So when you come down to Pacific Avenue on Saturday, you might consider, although I'm not a big patron of Badass Coffee myself, going in and, you know, thanking him and possibly even patronizing his store, at least on this particular day. That's just a thought. Back to the Downtown Commission. And I know it's kind of hard for you to hear, Chuck. It's completely unintelligible. Let me know, and I'll stop and give a translation again.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
I just have a question about the rules about overnight parking in the lot. Is it legal to park overnight in the lot?
Yes, it is. Did you say it
was
legal?
Legal.
It is legal to park overnight in the lots, is what the question was. And what they have is they have police officers in the room who are answering questions as well about this ordinance, as well as the staff guy, Marlon Granlund. 2 months before, they had rejected the idea of making it illegal to walk into a parking lot, just at making that a crime, making loitering a crime. And they'd also rejected laws that said, let's establish closed hours for certain parking lots between 3 and 5 a.m. because they didn't like the fact that homeless people parked their vehicles there and sometimes slept in them, even though it is illegal for a homeless person to do that under another law, which is the sleeping ban law. They wanted to have double laws to make sure that that these dirty, wretched, nasty homeless people don't hang out. Now, the Downtown Commission didn't buy this, not because they're great humanitarians, because the police, who were so confident that they brought absolutely no statistics at all, even though the city council a year ago had required them to come back with a half-year review, which they never did. And this you may remember, those of you who saw the city council meeting 2 nights ago, at the city council, Tony Madrigal decided to support this measure because Cynthia Matthews said, we'll give you a half-year review, a six-month review. They said the same thing last year and didn't. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with the fearsome twosome, Chuck and Robert.
Oh, man, I can't do this.
Who's this? Hello? Going once. Are you there?
Oh, hello, Robert.
Yeah, you got to turn down your radio.
Oh, hi.
Definitely turn down your radio. Oh, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Robert. I love the show, and I just wanted to tell you that Condor says hi.
Okay. Is there anything? Have you been listening to the show?
Yes.
What's your name?
John.
Oh, hey, John. And Condor, of course, is a man who's been performing on the sidewalk for 3 years. It's one of the strongest voices there. A man who's guitared. He's every Wednesday in front of New Leaf Market. He sings songs that I can only dream about singing.
And I'm proud to be his grandson. Have a good day.
All right, man. Yeah, Greg has got cancer. He's struggling to go into remission, and he's getting a lot of help from his family. And he's a supporter of expanding public spaces. That's what SAFE does every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night. SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, also known as Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement. They ignore the downtown ordinances. They say you have to be 10 feet from a crosswalk, 10 feet from a building, 10 feet, and you can't do this, you can't do that. And they say, no, we're going to do what's reasonable. We aren't going to block people's passage, but we're going to perform. And the police leave them alone. Maybe because they understand what you and I intuitively understand is that it's a positive part of the scene. Why mess with it? Maybe because they think if they do mess with it, they're going to have some problems, too. You know, who knows? Chuck?
Wow. I have a suggestion for the police, and this is like totally counter-free radio. It occurred to me that they have an enforcement problem, and I've seen police in action somewhere here. I've seen police slipping on the rubber gloves. I've seen them driving around in their squad cars. I've seen them on bicycles. I have a suggestion that maybe they ought to detox the authoritarian aspect of that a little bit and just give one cop, like, a parking meter-made car. And we'll call it the ice cream truck, and he can run around and make sure that homeless people aren't getting beat up and that drugs aren't being sold, and that tourists aren't being accosted, and buy them a bell if you want. But let's make this a little more cheerful environment around here instead of a police state
it's
appearance.
It's interesting. They actually have a thing called the Tactical Ice Cream Squad, not the police, but activists who wanted to teach Know Your Rights forums came to UCSC about a year ago with a thing called the Tactical Ice Cream Squad. And what they do is when they go into demonstrations or their protests, and they give out ice cream. And they also give out, sort of literature as to how what your rights are and so forth. And the police might actually consider doing the same thing, though I understand soldiers in Iraq, before their Blackwater buddies shoot you dead, will give you chewing gum and candy. So there is that. So.
If I were a cop, I think it would be a pretty good gig. Just, scoot around a motor scooter, be able to park on the spur of the moment instead of just in the white zone across from Starbucks, or block traffic if you got to do something, and have a little more fun with the process.
I think that's a good idea. Clown costumes might even be an improvement. I think there really would be.
No, that's over the top.
You think so? Okay, let's go back to the downtown commission. I will stop all this clowning around.
Other questions from commissioners? Oh, we have Jeffrey and then Sheila.
First of all, I'd like to acknowledge that this is a really important issue, and as far as the issues related to folks that are here that are representing the homeless community, I would like to acknowledge that as a city, we need to do better. We currently dedicate resources to this issue, but I think the proportionality of those resources to the issue that exists within our city are inadequate, and I would like to challenge our city leaders, including council members that are present here today, to think about this long and hard. There are programs in other cities that have this issue. I'll use San Francisco as an example. They have a very effective program called Project Connect that attempts to connect homeless individuals with a wide variety of services available in that city, and we really need to discuss something like that here in Santa Cruz. This is an important issue that tears the very fabric of our community.
But, of course, he doesn't suggest anything like this be put on the downtown commission agenda where he might have some power to do something about it or make such a recommendation to the city council. Also, this is a homeless issue because a lot of the problems that are perceived happening in parking lots don't have to do with crime. They have to do with people who are engaging in life-sustaining behavior or using public spaces where other people feel they shouldn't be there. Because they don't look right, they're not nice enough for a particular, I think, rather skewed tourist standard that doesn't really, as you pointed out, Chuck, have much to do with why people really do value Santa Cruz. Although that's often a cliche, and it's really hard for me to know empirically, is that true, or would people really like a town that looks like Carmel, where everything is very sweet? Because Carmel gets a lot of tourists. I mean, let's look at it. Let's be honest. Maybe they want a Carmel here. Maybe that would be better for the businesses if they could do that.
Carmel's pretty, but it's not pretty.
Sorry, say that again, Chuck.
Carmel's pretty, but it's not pretty. And people don't like Santa Cruz because it's weird. They like Santa Cruz because there's a lot of happy people down here. I mean, you go to these city council meetings and you listen to the people who don't want anything built in their neighborhood, who want these draconian laws, and it's painful to listen to them. It's like they got shriveled up little mean hearts, and they're just bitter and unhappy and sorry to be there and sorry that you're alive. And it's kind of sad. And you walk down the street and you listen to musicians and watch the break dancers, and these people are happy and having fun. And that's what people come to Santa Cruz for, is to be happy and have some fun.
Devil's advocate strikes again. As Mike Rotkin and Ed Porter said, even though they voted against this law at City Council, they said, it's not going to matter much either way if this law passes. You're still going to have the breakdancers. You're still going to have the people on the sidewalks. You're still going to have the same panhandlers and the same situation. So why should people bother to come to this protest, which you suggested they do? I should say a protest. It's a protest, but it's a way of parking and, with a funky car downtown and suggesting that, I suggest that people, since they're not going to let you loiter in the parking lots, people start loitering in front of the stores because, that's the other zone where you're going to be allowed to loiter if you don't have a car. This mainly affects people without cars, although it also has a very significant effect on people with cars because you can't sit, as you said, in your own vehicle. But if you don't have a vehicle, you're denied 5 square blocks of public space. They're gone from you. You can't go in there unless you have your, I'm with a guy with a car. Can I go in with you, sir? Do you have a car? I mean, you can walk through. It's true. But the question is, why bother? Why care about these laws? Mike and Ed said we vote against it, but we don't really care. It's not that important. It's not that draconian. Why are you wasting your time coming down to the studio and talking with us today?
I want to return to my earlier comments. I think that mean laws make for a mean cop, and it's not intentional on their part, but you got to harden your heart to do hard things to people. And if you got five city blocks where you got to just go be a jerk, you're eventually going to get to be more of a jerk, and that's going to carry over into your work wherever you're doing it.
So your reason for opposing this law is that you want to make sure the police stay humane? Is that the point?
That's certainly part of it. The main reason is I want to guarantee the right to assembly. I want those musicians to stay under that tree next to the market. I want the students to be able to congregate outside the entrance to UCSC and have that be their foyer instead of a parking lot that they got to vacate because they don't have a car there.
We're talking about the parking lot trespass law passed by City Council, but going up for a second reading before City Council a week from Tuesday. If you want to express your opinion to the City Council, or the Shitty Council, as I like to call them sometimes in my adolescent manner, you can give them a call at 420-5020. They do have a voicemail line, and they can accept your comments pro and con on this issue. They could vote it down. Porter and Riley voted against it. Madrigal was uncertain, but he said, Once Matthews, who was one of the big supporters of the law, Cynthia Matthews, said that she would allow a six-month review, he voted for it, and so did Emily Riley, the mayor. Go ahead, Chuck.
I also want to say that I think this is basically a red herring. One of the problems of a democracy is everybody feels that they have to have an opinion about whatever comes up, and you can only discuss so many things. And we're discussing picky and nasty, mean little spiteful laws like this. We're really not getting into a community conversation about the big issues that confront all of us. An example of which, to put it in a jocular vein, would be you might as well be nice to the homeless people, because with the way the mortgages are going, you might be among them. It would be nice to have some friends when you get there instead of just a bunch of people who don't like you.
Yeah. Back to the Downtown Commission, the group that gave us this law, actually it came from the police department, and a group called the Downtown Improvement Working Group, which is a secret group. They don't allow the public in. They're made up of three council members, Robinson, Matthews, and Coonerty, and they invite people from the police department and from the downtown, from a group called the Santa Cruz Neighbors and the Downtown Neighbors and the Downtown Association to join them, but not members of the general public. They cooked up this law, as did other people from the cops and people from the parking lot, public works. It didn't come from the community, and we know that because it doesn't really, this is my view, provide any real solutions to even the problems it poses. The crime problems it poses, one might say there really are no solutions, that you're going to have to accept a certain level of criminal behavior in a city of our size, that's just how it is. You can try to stop it. We can look out for each other more. We can be kinder to each other. We can try to help each other when we are the victim of crimes, as I've been helped when I've been the victim of crimes, sometimes by the police department. You know, that's happened to me when my car has been stolen, and I thank the police for it. But it's going to happen. These things happen in your life. And the idea, for example, of setting up triple fine zones, having goon squads marching up and down on Halloween in full riot gear, occupying Iraq in order to deal with the crime of 19 men who flew planes into a building and, you know, murdering a million Iraqis is not the way to go. And in Santa Cruz, it's not the way to go to start establishing harsher and harsher requirements, as you put it properly, Chuck, for the police department. Although I got to say, I don't think they're so innocent in this. A lot of these recommendations come out of the police department. They aren't just, you know, we have to follow orders. The police brass, the sleeping band, for instance, came in 1978 from the Santa Cruz Police Department.
None of us are innocent. Our wholesale acceptance of the very idea of homelessness, that a human being doesn't have a warm, dry, safe place to lie down at night, our wholesale acceptance of that, 48,000 people in Los Angeles, 2,000 or 3,000 people in Santa Cruz, 8,000 or 10,000 people in San Francisco, this is what we have become as a society. And to me, this is absolutely appalling. We need to redress that issue. We need to talk about these people not as a problem, but as our brothers, and how are we going to be our brother's keeper. And frankly, if they're in the street, I think it's our job to do that.
Definitely. And while this... You mentioned Los Angeles. I want to actually read this article because it talks about a change in the Jones decision, which a lot of us have been relying on as part of the Santa Cruz lawsuit against the sleeping ban, which we're trying to mobilize behind, some of us trying to end the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. That's a law that says after 11 o'clock at night, it's illegal for you to fall asleep, period, until 8:30 in the morning. So if you want to obey the law, you must stay awake all night if you're on any public property or you're in your vehicle on any public property, Or even if you're on private property, unless you're in a house or hotel or in certain other limited situations, is one of the strongest or harshest anti-sleeping laws in the state. And Los Angeles has come up with a response to it called the Jones decision, actually the Los Angeles ACLU and numerous other groups down there, which says you can't arrest people for sleeping at night unless you have, you know, a legal place for them to go, unless they're committing some other crime. I mean, that's preposterous. And there's there's 70 to 80,000 at least homeless people in Skid Row, and there was an injunction granted in April 2006 under the Jones versus LA court decision. That has recently gone to a settlement, and I'm going to read you that article in just a moment, but I think, Chuck, you have a comment. Did you have a comment you wanted to make? Or?
Once again, on that specific issue, I'm like a British kid. My own conversation runs in my head while you're doing your work over there. What I do want to say is Robert has said repeatedly that I'm idealistic. I don't want you to think that I'm coming off like all kumbaya and let's hold hands and sing Jesus Loves Us. This I know. I worked in the New Age and in centers like that for a long time, and I'm a hard-headed realist. I got real practical answers to what do we do about the problem of the differentiation between the rich and the poor. What do we do about Social Security? What do we do about the medical issues here? And I go and speak to every one of those every chance I get at other forums. Right now we're on one very small, actually,
feel free to speak to those briefly if you want. I mean, I don't want to, you know, cut you off, although we are going to move quickly onto the next issue. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I want to encourage everybody. He asked me my age. I'm 65. I figure I got 10 perfect years left to be of service and make amends for the rapaciously materialistic lifestyle I lived in the past. I want to say to anybody who is old, this old, or knows somebody this old, that there is no such thing as aging gracefully in place. Nobody ever aged in place, and you certainly can't do it with grace. Get out there, get to work, let's solve the problems in this world, figure out how to live together, make it sustainable, make it beautiful, and make it fun. You're not going to do that by buying yourself a Harley or a 57 Chevy and fixing it up. Come on, folks, let's get real.
What about getting rid of all those clowns in the parking lot who are causing problems? Maybe that'll make us feel better. You don't have to answer that, Chuck, unless you want to.
No, I'm going to pass on that.
Okay. 427-3772 is the call-in number. Here's a story from the L.A. Times. I believe it's yesterday's L.A. Times. L.A. homeless advocates reach deal on sidewalk sleeping. The homeless can sleep on L.A. streets from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. with certain restrictions. I think it's actually 6:30, but maybe I'm wrong. This is not doesn't sound like a change, but it actually, I'll read the story and you'll see some of the developments that have happened. October 11th, Chuck has a quick comment.
Quick pause here. Now, if we had that law in Santa Cruz, if we allowed people to park on the to sleep on the street because we're too stupid to figure out a better solution for them, and then we asked the cops to patrol at night to make sure that nobody got raped or beat up or robbed, we'd have a lot more compassionate society, and we'd have a lot more friendly homeless people, and we'd be a lot closer to solving our real problems.
Interesting. Even as Los Angeles officials announced Wednesday that they were settling a lawsuit with advocates for the homeless over a city law that prohibits people from sleeping on sidewalks downtown, Councilwoman Jan Perry vowed to pursue a law that would forbid such camping. This is kind of the right-wing element in Los Angeles. I should say that it's been the case for the last 18 months since, the last 16 and 17 months, since April of 2006, that the city police and the city attorney's office, particularly since September of last year, have not enforced the sleeping ban, sitting ban. It's sitting, sleeping, or lying ban on the in the Skid Row area between, I think it's 9 and 6:30 in the morning. But they have driven the homeless away by increasing it, by starting to harass people at 6:31, by coming in with parole checks in the middle of the night, by claiming people are loitering. And there was actually the ACLU had to go back to get a second restoration of an injunction to stop that from happening. So the police, because they want to drive homeless people out in order to gentrify the area, there are particular economic interests that feel that the downtown can serve a much more profitable purpose, and profit means profit for a few here, not for the community necessarily. If they can get rid of these goddamn Skid Row winos, bums, junkies, crazies, poor people, black people, you know, yellow people. And they're mostly black in the downtown L.A. Skid Row area. And we've actually had activists come up here to the Homies for the Homeless Sleep Out in Santa Cruz in August. General Dogan was black, and so were both his companions, African-Americans. Of course, we know in Santa Cruz there's no racial profiling, so all is well. Moving right along. The legal settlement involves a 2003 lawsuit brought by Skid Row residents. I was kidding about that racial profiling, but in case you didn't catch that dry humor of mine. The legal settlement involves a 2003 lawsuit brought by Skid Row residents who complained they were being arrested for sleeping on sidewalks despite having nowhere else to go. Under the new deal, the homeless can sleep on sidewalks from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. anywhere in the city, so they expanded it from Skid Row, as long as they do not block access to doorways or driveways or completely block the sidewalk. If a homeless person blocks an entrance or the sidewalk, police first must issue a warning and then give the person time to move. By the way, the warning provision in the parking lot trespass law, which was there, has been removed. They no longer have to warn you, according to ACLU activist Don Zimmerman, who spoke to me yesterday. I hadn't noticed that. So that's another aspect of the law we've been talking about, the parking lot law in Santa Cruz. It's going to make it illegal for you to do what people have always done in Santa Cruz, which is hang out. Not after the city council passes it a week from Tuesday, unless you want to, for example, oppose that, let's say, by calling the city council at 420-5020 or by coming down to Pacific Avenue and joining for a, I don't know if it's going to be a kumbaya session or possibly just coffee at the Badass. Who knows what we're going to do. But park your vehicle down there is a suggestion that Chuck here has. Getting back to the, you want to say something, Chuck? Or? No, good. Getting back to the article here in the L.A. Times about the change in the Jones decision. If a homeless person blocks an entrance or the sidewalk, police must first issue a warning and then give the person time to move. Until now, police were allowed to remove the homeless from sidewalks and neighborhoods outside downtown, although they rarely have done so. I don't know about that. Under the settlement's terms, the city can enforce its overnight sidewalk sleeping ban only if it builds 1,250 units of supportive housing for the homeless. Now, considering that there's more than 90,000 homeless people, that's going to be pretty crammed, but let's move on. With half those units downtown. City officials said such action was unlikely to take place for at least 3 to 5 years. The lawsuit was brought by six homeless people who alleged that the city's enforcement of the sidewalk sleeping ban was harassment. But the deal drew criticism from downtown business leaders because it allows sidewalk sleeping to continue. People eat, sleep, live, and defecate in the same place on sidewalks. What's good about that? Said Estella Lopez, executive director of the Central City East Association. Perry, the councilwoman who represents most of the 50-square-block area known as Skid Row, resisted efforts last year to settle the lawsuit. The difference this time around, she said, was the provision allowing the homeless to sleep overnight anywhere in the city, not just in Skid Row. I felt that whatever applied in this community should apply to all communities in Los Angeles, said Perry, who called the settlement a decent outcome for now. But, Perry said, she wants to create a new anti-camping ordinance that could withstand a challenge by the American Civil Liberties Union, which helped argue the case against the ban. Ramona Ripston, executive director of the ACLU of Southern California, said her group would oppose any anti-camping law. The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in April of 2006 that the city was woefully short of overnight shelter space and said arresting a homeless person for sleeping on the sidewalk was cruel and unusual punishment. Chuck, you have a comment?
Particularly apropos of the homeless issue, I want to mention the situation with our Hispanic population and the illegal immigrants in the state of California, particularly in the rest of the country. If you watch the debate, you will notice the Democrats and Republicans falling over each other to see who can figure out the best way to use and exploit this labor force. There is nobody who wants to assimilate them. There is nobody who wants to join with them. Frankly, that border is going to be what it is because of the differential. It's an absolutely titanic force. You're not going to stop it. And the only and the final solution is the North America Union from the Arctic Circle to Panama, for starters. This would mean that Carlos Slim doesn't get to own everything and everything and be the richest man in the world. This would mean that Mexico's got to clean up his legal system and his financial system before the borders are open. This would mean that Canada would have to agree. This would hopefully mean that America would get a little more socialist and a little less capitalist. And it would mean that we'd have the resources and the demographics and the land and the heart to solve the problems that are facing all of us on a global level, including living far more simply and far more cooperatively and far more decently in behavior towards one another. I'm sick and tired of listening to Republicans and Democrats figure out how to exploit the Mexican.
I share your distaste. I'm afraid, though, that that kind of thing might also go in the other direction. It might lead to cheapening labor standards in the U.S., destroying, well, even further. Now, instead of 7% unionization, you'd have less. you know, it would also result in a massive, I mean, just like globalization has produced the ability to take jobs elsewhere, where it's cheap, destroy a native agriculture, native industry, and not to mention, you know, forcing living standards here in this country down because workers can't afford to make any money anymore. They don't get paid. They don't get their jobs.
I'm well aware that NAFTA and CAFTA screwed us on the environmental and the labor issue, and it's one reason I won't vote for Hillary, because
right.
I think that the Clintons will still be open to that kind of expediency. And frankly, I can't stand the thought of them staying awake every night for 4 years fighting over who's going to get to be the president and make the policy.
Let's get back to that sleeping ban, because that's what we're talking about. Ramona Ripston, again, we're talking about the L.A.'s decision, the L.A. City Council's decision, apparently, to come to a settlement with ACLU. They had resisted a settlement, but the de facto settlement has been for the last year and a half now, apparently, to be a lawful, and actually a settlement in law that will allow not just Skid Row, but all over the city of Los Angeles, people will be allowed to sleep during the nighttime hours, 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., on the sidewalks, if they're not blocking the sidewalks or blocking the doorways, until such time as there are a certain number of housing units built that have nothing to do with the actual housing needs. Sounds like kind of a sop. And I'll read some more of this story. Judges also wrote in their decision that Los Angeles sidewalk sleeping law was more restrictive than those in most other cities and amounted to criminalizing homelessness. And that, by the way, is the theoretical argument Coonerty and City Attorney Barisoni here in Santa Cruz used to claim that our law is different, our law is constitutional, because we allow the homeless to sleep during the day, you see?
I don't care if it's constitutional or not. It's certainly not compassionate. I admire the fact that we hire Down syndrome people to clean the streets around here, and I recognize that some homeless people are handicapped, but I think we ought to have a homeless work program, too, where they can earn credits for a shelter by doing an hour's work a day in some variety or other, you know, cleaning up the river or whatever. We have got to solve this problem. It's not good enough just to say they can sleep on the street. We've got to get them sleeping indoors somewhere. We've got to get them feeling like they're part of the family again.
But both the city, getting back to Los Angeles, and the homeless advocates agreed to ask the appeals court to vacate its decision. If the court declines, the settlement will be negated. Since the Ninth Circuit's ruling, the Los Angeles Police Department has been enforcing the ban only during the day. Ripston said this settlement would force the city to build supportive housing where the homeless can receive treatment for problems that led them to live on the streets. Like all settlements, it's not perfect, Ripston said, but it's a case that started with a request for shelter beds. We're getting a lot more beds than we asked for. Chuck, you comment?
Yeah, go ahead and get some more.
The council unanimously approved the settlement Tuesday in a closed-door meeting, a move that infuriated downtown business leaders who had followed the issue for years. Carol Schatz, president and chief executive of the Central City Association, said the council pursued a stealth strategy that would leave downtown to cope with the brunt of the homeless crisis. It's impossible to believe that they really wanted our input, said Schatz. Sounds like the Santa Cruz City Council, whose group, although of course they don't want it, they don't mind the business input, they just don't want the... although business people here say the city council doesn't like them either. It's interesting, the Santa Cruz City Council. But getting back to L.A., it's impossible to believe that they really wanted our input, said Schatz, whose group represents developers and business interests. For one businessman, the settlement also raises the prospect that the homeless will increasingly spread beyond Skid Row, bounded by 3rd, 7th, Main, and Alameda Streets, and begin setting up tents and boxes on sidewalks in front of downtown's increasing number of late-night restaurants, as well as the newly opened Ralph's Supermarket and Staples Center.
Oh, no, not the Ralph's.
It could happen. How would you like people setting up tents in front of your house with no bathroom facilities? It's going to be a health hazard, said Peter Zen, the owner's representative for the Westin Bonaventura Hotel. And every morning after they clear out their tents, who's going to clean up after them? The LAPD last year increased the number of officers deployed to Skid Row, say the least, in order to get rid of them. Police Chief William J. Bratton said the effort had greatly reduced crime there, but also had pushed homeless to other parts of the city. Actually, they simply created more arrests for drug crimes, because that's what was the main deal in that Skid Row area. This is a story in the L.A. Times, and the real question for us here in Santa Cruz is whether, those of us who are pursuing the sleeping ban lawsuit, does this destroy the Jones precedent? Because the Jones decision precedent is based upon a published decision which would become, if it become vacated, if this settlement is approved by the court. And that means we would have no more Jones decision, probably, and we would have to have our own case and argue our own case again from scratch, which is harder. The Jones decision has had the positive effect of causing San Diego, Fresno, and Richmond to change its either laws or police policies and allow homeless people to sleep at night. Admittedly, as you point out, Chuck, on the streets, which sucks. But it sucks even worse to be arrested for for sleeping on the streets at night or in the bushes or wherever the heck you can find out under the freeways or underpasses.
I'm kind of an eternal optimist, and I always want to ask people to look at the higher issue. This is a nation that claims that they're 85% believers in God. You know, the question is, what is Jesus? Would Jesus do? Would he drive the beggar from the temple? No, he'd throw the money lenders from the temple. And I encourage everybody to take every opportunity to address these legal issues as they arise and to be like I am, be a guerrilla activist. And when something comes up on a city council and what you see is going really in the wrong direction, go down and spend 4 hours to get your 3 minutes worth of say in. But in general, try and appeal to people's higher nature and say, you know, folks, this is just wrong. This is just not human. Compassion is practical. It's real. It's the final answer. And you're not gonna outlaw nuisances.
Well, I'm going to try to appeal to Emily Riley's higher nature, and I talked to her on Monday, but I frankly don't have a lot of hope in that regard in this particular issue. I'm meeting with her at 11 o'clock.
I do. She may be pretty well defended. But keep open to the possibility. She might change her mind. She might surprise you. Everybody eventually does.
Politicians very rarely, but yeah, I mean, it could happen. A couple of announcements here, because we are getting to the last 20 minutes of the show. I failed to announce, and I should have announced, I apologize, that Joe Simitian, our state senator, or somebody's state senator in this district anyway, had a town hall meeting tonight from 6 to 7:30, where we probably should have been raising the roof on a number of issues. He's in the 11th Senate District. He was on the top floor of the county building. You might be able to, you know, find some lingering people up there if you wander on up there and check him out. Richard Quigley, who is the activist, the motorcycle activist, who fought the helmet laws for so long and who died a couple of weeks ago, his memorial, and he actually had a memorial while he was alive. We had a wake for him while he was still alive, which was fun, about a year and a half ago. He had cancer, incurable cancer. He will be having another memorial. We're all on the steps of the courthouse, assuming we don't get rained out, Saturday at noon. And he was a guy who did a number of things during the first Iraqi war, which he opposed. He had fuck war T-shirts, which the farmer's market I guess it was the drive-in market, did not allow him to sell. They banned him from the market out of a patriotic fervor that he wasn't supporting the war. Interestingly enough, Quigley then, in 2003, he supported Bush's Iraqi war on that occasion, where I, of course, severely disagreed with him. But I didn't kill him. I want you to know that. It was cancer that did that. I have too much respect for the guy in other respects. He defended the rights of poor people at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, where they are using similar kinds of what I call social cleansing techniques to get rid of young people, poor people, I might even say disabled people, you know, people who look scruffy and gruffy and that sort of thing. And Jerry Henry, Richard Quigley's friend, has been fighting a long battle there, and we've chronicled some of that battle here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And for those of you who are interested, by the way, in following some of these stories in more detail, you can come back on Sunday, and that's going to be at... I come in actually earlier during Thomas Levitt's show, which starts at 7:30, and then my show starts at 9:30, but I'm there for some of his shows, so we kind of mix it up together. It goes till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'll be playing some more of the Downtown Commission tape, probably a little more of it tonight before we go off the air. You got a comment, Chuck?
Yeah, we're running short on time. I'd like to take this up. Conversation up to a much higher level. We're talking about rich and poor here. We're talking about poverty and wealth. And in fact, on a global basis, we're in the last half hour of a bad Monopoly game. It's hard to follow, but we got a call. Take the call.
Hey there, caller. It's Chuck and Robert, and we want to hear what you have to say.
Hi, am I on the air?
You are on the air.
This is Jennifer Friedenbach calling from Coalition on Homelessness San Francisco.
Jennifer, congratulations. You made it through.
Yeah, I'm...
We've been trying to get Jennifer on the air. Now, Jennifer, we've been reading about the L.A. decision here around the Jones decision. Any reaction to that? Does that mean we're screwed, we lose the precedent, but the L.A. homeless do get the benefit of a temporary expansion of the right to sleep on the sidewalks at night throughout L.A.?
You know, I can't really comment on the legal opinion. I mean, I don't feel able to, and because I haven't really had a chance to look at it and figure out what it means. I mean, I saw the newspaper article and, you know, how that goes. But, I mean, what's been going on in L.A. Is basically Jim Crow on Skid Row, and it's been a really awful situation. I don't know if you've been talking about it much on your show or not, but they have a situation there where, you know, people standing there who, you know, happen to have black skin are smoking a cigarette, flicking ash, and they're actually brought into custody. They're bringing people to jail for jaywalking. People are doing time in cells for crossing the street against a red light, and that is the situation in Los Angeles. They have a large number of poor people there, and therefore a large homeless population. They have about 96,000, and it's been a really bad situation where are selectively prosecuting based on your geographic location, which ends up being very based on race. And, you know, they're in Los Angeles, they're calling it, you know, I mean, they basically play on the fears of the black man to do all this kind of stuff. And but it's basically the same exact thing that's going on in San Francisco, except in San Francisco, they're talking about needles and defecation and, you know, just calling it by a different name, but basically using the same kind of tactics.
I know that the Santa Cruz Chronicle and our old friend, was it C.L. Nevius? Is that his name?
The San Francisco Chronicle, yeah, C.W. Nevius.
The devious Nevius, we might call him.
Yeah.
Every day it's a new smear job against the homeless, and the headlines of the Sentinel are almost every day. And I guess Newsom came up with a new anti-camping law for Golden Gate Park. Is that the latest?
Well, what happened was is that in the August 1st, he came out with an article on Golden Gate Park and people camping in the park. And the Newsom administration did an immediate response that was basically sending police out into the park at 3 a.m. every morning. They were arresting people on the state camping code 647s, and then if they were still there, actually taking them into custody. And they were sending them with social worker. It was, you know, people in Santa Cruz might not be as familiar with, but in San Francisco, Matrix under Frank Jordan, which is the previous mayor, was highly unpopular, and he basically ended up losing the election on that issue. And it's, in essence, doing the exact same thing, jailing people for being too poor to afford a place to live. And the more recent thing is this memo that was leaked by Supervisor Chris Daley, who is a leftist supervisor representing the Forest District in San Francisco. And he was, you know, he leaked this memo that he somehow got his hands on, and it basically outlined the mayor's plan for similar efforts in the South of Market area. So that's what's been in the San Francisco Chronicle the last few days. But, you know, this Nevius guy is not a journalist. He's a columnist, but they're running him on the front page above the fold and kind of tricking people into thinking he's actually a journalist, and he doesn't actually do any research or anything like that. He kind of just, you know, spews out his opinion.
And the police department's opinion. But in the studio with me, Jennifer, is Chuck Huddleston, who's a man who spoke eloquently two nights ago at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting where they passed the parking lot trespass law, which makes it illegal to walk into a parking lot unless you have a car or bicycle there, and then only for 15 minutes.
Right. This has been going on for a while there, right?
Right. This got a first reading. It'll get a second reading. We're trying to organize protests against it. And Chuck has a comment or question for you.
I just wanted to point out to you, I don't know if you caught Bernie Ward on KGO Radio, really slammed Nevius last night for not even living in San Francisco and being a complete jerk on the issue.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was having a difficult time hearing you.
Yeah, you see.
Bernie Ward on KGO Radio last night slammed Nevius for not even living in San Francisco and being a complete fool in the way he's addressing this issue in the paper.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't live in San Francisco. I mean, a couple of things I kind of figured out about this guy. One thing, he has a very, very big heart in terms of he's exceptionally concerned about people who come into San Francisco to work there or who are there as tourists. And that seems to be the extent of what he seems to care about. And
that's the new Christian definition of the least among us.
Yeah, one of the other things that he keeps doing is that he refuses to have any kind of context in terms of the causes of homelessness in any of his columns, and really focuses on kind of, you know, blaming the individual who's homeless and kind of focusing on the behavior of them or, you know, this kind of thing with no analysis whatsoever in terms of why people are here on the streets in the first place. I mean, to hear, you know, to read his paper, you would think that there was clouds of defecation above San Francisco that were just opening up and hypodermic needles shooting out of playgrounds, poking children. I mean, it's just outrageous. And if you read his articles and kind of substitute any other class of people, you know, people would be outraged. But I think what it is that they're a newspaper that's hurting, they're losing business, and they're using this kind of yellow journalism tactic of kind of spewing hate in order to booster their online readership. Attract more folks from the suburbs, that kind of thing, and it ends up increasing their advertising sales.
Jennifer, what are the chances of the supervisors, the board of supervisors, turning back Newsom's initiatives and taking things in a different direction?
Well, there is no sit and lie initiative being proposed at this point. I mean, in terms of what was being talked about in the Chronicle, the efforts that that are going on in the street aren't really in the realm of the board of supervisors. They're kind of a policy decisions that are made by departments. We haven't really figured out a way for the supervisors to be able to step in and stop it.
What about advocates? I know that San Francisco has delayed any kind of attack on its sleeping ban policies for a year and a half while the Jones decision was precedent. The ACLU, in essence, sat on its hands. When I talked to Don Zimmerman, ACLU activist down here, he said, well, Jones' decision is a bad decision, it won't stand, hasn't been reviewed enough, blah, 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 blah. Didn't persuade me, didn't persuade our attorneys Kate Wells and David Beauvais, who are taking cases down here to try to overturn the Santa Cruz sleeping ban. But San Francisco is a much larger area. You've got more resources. You're connected with this stuff, and you have some legal savvy. Why aren't you using the Jones decision? What's going on with
that? Well, we don't have a sleeping ban in San Francisco.
Yeah, but you have policies that involve waking people at night and arresting them, right? Yeah, and because they can't, whether it's trespass, I guess.
Right, we got the trespassing thing, which we tried to legally challenge.
Uh-huh.
We've got the park code stuff, which we were talking about trying to overturn, which, you know, theoretically we could do through our board of supervisors. We weren't able to politically even get any, not even one supervisor to even move forward on introducing that. We were attempting to do it through the courts while this whole thing was pending. At this point, we might be able to, but it's kind of a question of what are we overturning. And, you know, the laws that they use, for example, they use a blocking the sidewalk, which really is for restaurants who have tables out or something like that, and it's for when you're physically all the way blocking the sidewalk. So, I mean, we fight these cases in the court, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And get a lot of them dismissed because they're improperly given out. But, you know, one of the things that we're worried about is that what the police are going to start using, and it's, you know, the kind of citations that they give changes depending on which way the political winds are blowing or, you know, what the latest trend is.
Well, what about an injunction that just tells the police you cannot go, like the Pottinger injunction in Miami, Florida, that simply stops the police practice of hassling people at night when they're sleeping? Whatever code they choose to use.
Yeah, I mean, we would love to do any of those things. We don't have any attorneys on staff and stuff like that. If we were able to get an attorney to take it on, then and it seemed like a viable case. So far, we haven't had any success.
I'm not criticizing the coalition. I'm just wondering why the ACLU hasn't been doing this. They do have attorneys on staff. They make a lot of money while the Bush regime goes down to discredit. Their stock rises, yet they aren't doing shit for the homeless, at least not in Northern California that I know of, except for, I guess, Fresno. There was some action taken around that property decision, the Kim K.
Can you say that on the air without getting fined? Just kidding.
Fuck yes. If you'll forgive me for being so adolescent.
I mean, I think, you know, I think what we have experienced, in our kind of longer-term struggle to try to end homelessness is that there is a very deep level of classism in the United States that permeates even the left. And what we have is this buy-in of this idea that homelessness is somehow a lifestyle choice and not something that has structural causes. And we see that a lot in San Francisco. You know, San Francisco, that's what's such a joke about, you know, the Nevious columns is that this whole thing enough is enough. Is San Francisco changing its mind? San Francisco has never been progressive with regards to poverty issues. Never. You know, yeah, it's progressive in terms of gay rights, in terms of opposing the war and that kind of thing. But, you know, if we're talking about poor folks, then it's never really truly been that progressive. And so, I mean, I think what we have is a problem where, and I hear this from leftists all the time, you know, why organize homeless people? You know, what's the thing in that? You know, there's this really deep-seated classism and an inability to connect the dots in terms of why we have homelessness and somehow separating out people who are without housing in the United States is somehow different from people who are without housing in countries all around the world where, you do get a lot of, you know, in South America and all these different movements. Where you have a lot of leftists that get really excited about, you know, working with folks around, you know, regaining their rights to land, et cetera. Not the case when we're talking about poor folks here in the United States. So,
time for me to move to Buenos Aires.
I think that attitude also permeates the ACLU.
Jennifer?
Yes?
I'd like to encourage you to take that as far as possible. This classist attitude, it's not only hard on the homeless, it's hard on the planet. And we're not going to solve our problems as long as Dick Cheney says, my lifestyle won't change, and he means his, not yours. We're going to have to reinvent how we live on this planet, and it's going to be a lot closer to a carbon footprint of a homeless man than it is going to be to the carbon footprint of the people who think they are the end-all and be-all of American ideal existence.
Right.
Right? Did that mean tomorrow you're going to adopt the homeless lifestyle there, Jennifer? I don't think so. I don't think I am. I don't think you are either, Chuck. Hypocrites all. Hello, everybody.
Well,
you'd be amazed at what a simple lifestyle I live.
Well, maybe so. Maybe so. I know some people who do that.
I've lived in less than 120 square feet of personal space for the last 20 years. I know what I'm talking about. And, yes, I do have a fat van sitting outside. But I lived in that for 6 months, and it's an old friend. It's like a turtle shell. It's hard to let go of.
I got to say, one of the reasons I do this work is how much I appreciate my bed in my blanket and being able to go inside, lock a door, and get some personal space. But, you know, it's, you know, one of the reasons why I fight so hard, and I believe that every human being has the right to housing, and that's just...
And you just defined housing as shelter, and that's the appropriate definition in times like these.
I defined housing as shelter?
Yeah, a room of your own you close the door on, or your warm, safe, dry place to sleep, preferably with a full belly.
Yeah, I don't think he means a shelter in San Francisco under the shelter system.
No, I mean,
I'm
your
just
room
saying what I appreciate
your door
when I go
on
home. I did mention the fact that I can close my door and lock out the rest of the world, so I think that would separate it from a shelter.
Jennifer, is there? We're talking with Jennifer Friedenbach of the Coalition on Homelessness up in San Francisco. Is there more that you'd like to talk about in a subsequent discussion? Because we got to go now. I mean, I really appreciate your getting through to us. We've had a lot of talk by phone, and finally you got through to us. Maybe you can try again next week for an update.
Yeah, sure. I can give it a try. As you can tell with the background noise, it's a bit of a struggle for me.
And looking for street sheets still, if you're up for it, you know.
Oh, yeah. No,
issues.
We just haven't gotten the latest one yet because we sent it bulk mail because we can't use the stamps. So it takes forever. It takes like 3 weeks. So
I got you. But
yeah.
If you got some old issues, I'm looking for those for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and we don't.
I like
we,
your background noise. It's called life.
Yeah, and we. Yeah, I. Okay, well, I'll, I can't do the back issues. I checked into that.
Don't worry about that now. But
yeah.
Thank you very much for taking care of the kid and also dealing with us.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Goodbye. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye. That's Coalition on Homelessness. If you want to reach them, they can be reached by phone. Jennifer's probably calling from her home, but in San Francisco, 415-34... Nope, I haven't got the right number with me. So call the Huff Line, by the way, if you have any questions about anything you've heard on the show. The Huff Line is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's easy to remember. It is 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F, 423-4833. Again, the Quigley Memorial is going to be at noon, I believe. I could be wrong. It could be at 1 o'clock. I'd say come at noon to the county building this Saturday. That's day after tomorrow. We're going to be doing some remembering of Quigley and maybe some protesting. Who knows? Maybe we'll go downtown and join the Saturday protest there at Pacific Avenue.
Little park in, little be in, little sit in.
A park in, a sit in, a loiter in.
Sit in the car.
You know, have a good time in. That's Pacific Avenue on Saturday. What time are you going to start that, do you think?
Take your pick.
Okay, anytime on Saturday. San Lorenzo Market, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. I've been reminded they have arts and crafts, 10 to 12, puppet shows at 12, music circle 2 to 4, arts and crafts 4, puppet show 5 to 6. Actually, puppet show at 4 and arts and crafts 5 to 6. Also on the air coming up on Sunday in the morning, Anita Henry talking about Measure K. That's the lowest priority enforcement for marijuana that is being sabotaged by the city. And how can we fight back against this absurd war on drugs, which is, you know, it all mixes in with the parking lot trespass and all this other nonsense. Paul Ortiz is going to be talking about racial profiling and the gangbanging of Tony Madrigal, who probably needs a good slap in the chops, but he doesn't need, and we don't need, to have the police department telling the city council members what they can say and what they can do. I'm going to be playing more of the Downtown Commission. Joe of the L.A. Can may be calling in. He's supposed to call in today but didn't. That's the Los Angeles Community Action Network talking about Los Angeles more directly. I'll be talking about all kinds of other stuff, and I'm going to give the last 2 minutes to my special guest, Chuck Huddleston, who will be around surveying the scene on Pacific Avenue with his big van on Saturday morning or afternoon or somewhere like that.
Yeah, I want to thank you for this invitation, Robert. It's nice to go somewhere where I've got an opportunity to say something for more than 3 minutes.
Hey.
Obviously, I've got a lot of thoughts on my mind. I want to encourage everybody to please do understand that not only do we have to solve our current problems are just a symptom of our need to reinvent life on Earth for sustainability, compassion, durability, friendship, and beauty. This can be done. We've got to learn how to afford to be safe to be poor. And a couple of things that are going to be required for that are going to be a national single-payer health system and a national pension system. Pension guarantee corporations going broke. Corporations want to dump them. Fold it all into a national pension system sufficient to a simple lifestyle. Go live it and don't retire. Get out there in the street, work part-time, and help us turn this into a better place. Your kids will appreciate it. You need to work. It'll keep you young and keep your mind healthy. And we can do this if we do it together.
I'm speechless. But I won't be when I come back on Sunday. Come back with me if you'd like, or call the Huff line. And come on down on Saturday, and we're going to talk about how to deal with this. Contact Madrigal and Riley to change this vote on the parking lot law, which, as pointed out, is a very small part of a very much bigger picture. But sometimes, unless you work on the details will overwhelm you, so be advised. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Again, go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Check out Indie Media, too, Santa Cruz Indie Media, INDY. It's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, INDYBAY/Santa Cruz, all small letters, all one word, santacruz.org. And you get a lot of my writing on these issues, which, of course, is the best, in spite of the typos and the occasional lapses in logic and good taste.
Jim should have come home a hero. He rescued his men from the maze of a fierce jungle fight. But when the war ended, the band in the park wasn't playing. No Main Street parade, no fireworks lit up the night. Bad man Jim lives alone, a burned out shack for a home. One more stray on his own. Bad man Jim is how the street people know him. He holds his head high and he treats everyone with respect. The medals of war he keeps in a box in the corner. His freedom he wears like a bright golden badge on his chest. Bad man Jim lives alone, a burned out shack for a home. One more stray on his own. toss them away. When Jim returned home, the box in the corner was empty. But the love for his country could never be taken away. Cadman Jim lives along a burned out shack for a home. One more stray on his own.
music from long ago here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Uncle Dennis welcoming you to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s. And that, of course, was the Argent classic, Hold Your Head Up. And that's what we're going to be doing for the next couple hours around here, playing music from a long time ago. Want to remind folks that the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use, will be up at 9 o'clock. And at 10 o'clock, we'll have our Spotlight Group of the Week, which I planned ahead this week. It will be the Beatles. So if you want to hear an hour of Beatles music, we're going to start in 1962 and work our way up. Stay tuned. 10 o'clock hour, we'll hear Beatles for an hour. All right. Until then, we're going to hear a lot of music of the 60s and the 70s. Of course, in just a few minutes, we'll open the Brew of the Week. And let's listen to some H.P. Lovecraft.
Stay in.